Hi, everybody. This is Geraldo Rivera reporting Roadkill, my political podcast, The View of a Moderate from the Middle of the Road, and The View from Here of President Joe Biden and his term in office, looking pretty, pretty grim. He was a president that had a wonderful honeymoon. Everybody loved getting that free money from the stimulus checks. The vaccine was finally getting spread out. The country looked like it was on an even keel, spending money hand over fist, but no one seemed to object, at least no one that wasn't a Republican in Congress. But now you have Biden with that chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, with some of the other missteps, how he behaved when the Gold Star families and he were all at Dover Air Force Base for the dignified transfer. It was him checking his watch and so forth. The bloom is off the Biden rose. He is Roadkill.
Roadkill with Geraldo Rivera.
It's Friday, September the 3rd. I'm delighted to be home. It was not easy to get home. I was doing the Five, the big hit Fox News program that airs live at 5 o'clock Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I was desperate to get home. It's very difficult. Now, there are no flights. It is extraordinary to me that in a city with a storied past like Cleveland, with aspirations for the future, that there's like two flights to New York a day. It is appalling to me. So anyway, I booked a flight from New York Wednesday night to Washington, D.C., and from Washington, D.C. to Cleveland, because Washington, D.C. still has the evening flight to Cleveland. So obviously, you know what was happening Wednesday night. Wednesday night was a biblical storm all up and down the East Coast, the remnants of Hurricane Ida. So you could draw the line, really, from Louisiana straight into New York and New England, including Philadelphia and environs. It was crazy in New York Wednesday night. So all the flights were canceled. So I reluctantly stayed an extra night, Wednesday night. I had no choice. I mean, my window looked out on Fifth Avenue. Fifth Avenue was a river. You could see one or two vehicles all the way from, say, 55th Street, where I was kind of on a hill, looking down past the New York Public Library, all the way, you know, into the distance down Washington Square Park. It was all water. There was water everywhere, not a drop to drink. It was nuts. So they canceled the flights on Wednesday night. So I cleverly booked the first flight yesterday morning, Thursday morning. So I set my alarm for 5:15. Make a long story short, somehow I never heard the alarm. I woke up at 7 o'clock. So the sun was shining. Fifth Avenue was miraculously dry, relatively speaking. I had the Weather Channel on, and they were talking about all the horrors, and I'll get into what happened in New York as a result of Hurricane Ida. But I thought it would be great. So I missed that flight. Turns out that flight was also canceled, so it's a good thing I missed it. They finally got out in the middle of the afternoon yesterday, but the news now is accumulating all of the body count for the storm. Now they're up to 61 people died. Many of the people who died in the borough of Queens, for example, were in these little illegal basement apartments. I've lived in one. Most people that move to New York ultimately find themselves living in one of these illegal basement apartments with only one exit, the street exit. The problem is that it's below the level of the street. So if the street's a river, all that river pours into your window. 11 people were drowned in their basement apartments in Queens. There was a total of 61 dead. And you see the sports stadiums with a foot of water in them still. The devastation is just now being accumulated. And the most incredible thing about it, and this is why it was so remarkable, is usually severe weather is something that happens someplace else. Like I live now in Cleveland, Ohio. The severe weather you get, generally speaking, here is winter, and you get an occasional winter storm. But we don't get earthquakes here. You don't get tornadoes here, generally speaking. They don't come this far east. we don't get the kind of flooding that New York, if you saw the news clips, I mean, it's worse than that. Water was pouring into the subways. Water was pouring into the subways when the subway train were running. You could see them running basically through waterfalls. And so many died in their cars because they drove, you know, into what they thought was minor puddles turned into, you know, big ditches or creeks. You know, many were drowned, many heroic rescues. The first responders were doing a magnificent job. But my point is, what we did not expect was here is in New York, where everything is paved, where, you know, generally speaking, as in Cleveland, there are not huge weather stories, you know. And I was watching, as I said, the news, New York One, that's the local cable news that runs the cable system. Spectrum runs it, so it runs all the time. And the Weather Channel, and the people on those two, the Weather Channel and New York One, were absolutely hysterical. Oh, my God, get to high ground. This is serious. We've never seen this. This is, you know, this is something that happens in Tennessee or it happens in Kansas. It doesn't happen in New York City. Get to higher ground. You save yourselves. Don't drive your cars. You know, hunker down. And the language was so hyperbolic. It really was. I mean, it was so urgent. So impassioned from people, you know, usually the weather guys, ladies and men are, you know, kind of measured. They have little quirky things that you like about them. That's why you watch them. What you don't expect is for these, you know, kind of meteorological nerds to be, oh, my God, this is horrible. It was alarming. And I thought how unprofessional of the broadcasters until the video and the live shots started coming in showing, you know, familiar things like your street side restaurants that were set up for COVID, the outdoor seating being swept away as if it was, you know, a raging river, not, you know, 55th Street. So I got home eventually. It was really very, and it was frustrating, but I was so lucky compared to all these poor people, particularly, and having gone through that phase myself, where you're so broke apartments and there's barely light that trickles in. You look up at the subway, looking up, I mean, not the subway, you look up at the sidewalk. Imagine looking up at the sidewalk and seeing water cascading, giant water just pouring into your house with no place to hide, no back door, and the front door is underwater. I mean, it was it's just horrible to think of that that all happening. And I have no idea with all the COVID you know, restrictions and the protocols and everything else, how they reestablish all that stuff. I mean, New York is broke up right now, and it was quite an experience. And my brother, Craig, who was my producer on The Five, he left. Cordelia, his wife, had her birthday on Wednesday night. They were celebrating at a jazz club. They left early because of the storm. They got from Manhattan into New Jersey, and they got on Route 3, a very major thoroughfare there, and they couldn't go any further. There were cars floating on Route 3, so they had to. My brother lives in nearby Verona, New Jersey. I mean, it's like a stone's throw from New York. They had to stop, get out of their car for fear that the car would be swept away, and they stayed in one of those, you know, nickel-dime hotels on Route 3, commercial hotels that, you know, traveling salesmen stay in before they go to the Big Apple. So they were marooned. They had to spend the night in a motel. But 61 people dying in a place that is so developed, it was really crazy. I didn't mean to speak so much about it. I just want you to know that this was, in my view, this was worse than Hurricane Sandy in terms of maybe it won't be as expensive as Hurricane Sandy, because Hurricane Sandy, after all, it filled up all the tunnels that had to be pumped out and, you know, did a lot of damage to infrastructure and so forth. But it just seemed to me that more people were adversely affected, and the death count, 61 people dead from rain. I mean, it was raining. The rain totals, it could not. I walking from the 5 to my car on 6th Avenue was like, it wasn't like walking in the shower. It was like walking in a fire hose. The raindrops were like, 2 inches thick. And the rain was falling at a rate of, I think it was 3 inches per hour. Central Park, you know, that beautiful fountain, Bethesda Fountain, in the middle of Central Park by the pond. Everything was, the water level was so high that Bethesda is at the bottom of this big courtyard. You walk down these very stately stairwell to get to the level where the fountain is. And you go, the next level is the lake. Everything was flooded. Up to the stairs, the Bethesda fountain was flooded up to the statue in the middle. It was just what I'm trying to convey to you is that the city was really, really staggered. Then the next day, sun came out, and there was a lot of pumping and repairing and replacing. But the sunshine gave you a full sense of, anyway, I got out, I came home.
Harold, I would imagine it would be almost like having a blizzard in South Beach or an earthquake in Boston. The city just wasn't prepared for it.
It was not psychologically, was not physically
infrastructure.
Prepared.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of not being prepared, too, I was reading a lot of stuff about, New York never having a flash flood warning, never having anything
never.
Like this.
We've never had a flash flood warning ever my entire life. Not even one flash flood warning ever.
Well, and because
except Wednesday night.
Well, but because of that, though, there's not too many homeowners insurance policies or just building insurance policies that have flood insurance written in.
Good
so,
point.
We talk about the human cost, and you also talk about how New York hasn't exactly had the easiest year and a half.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, they got another big mountain to climb. So New Yorkers are used to doing it. I just wish they didn't have to do it all that often.
You know, speaking of a hill to climb. President Joe Biden, who has been on a tremendous honeymoon for the last 6-8 months, he has, been walking on water. I hate to use that metaphor, but he's been unscathed by anything up until now. It's been Uncle Joe. He's been giving out that free money. He's been giving out the extended unemployment checks, stimulus checks. I mean, the vaccines have started taking hold despite all the problems with holdouts. So here you've had Uncle Joe really skating, passing all of these very generous federal laws or handouts, people getting checks that never expected. So he was soaring. His popularity was in the 50s throughout the first 8 months of his presidency. Suddenly, now, after Afghanistan, the horror of Afghanistan and that chaotic withdrawal, to put it kindly, and then, of course, the 13 Marines or 13 service members being killed in the last frantic days of the evacuation of Kabul, his popularity now, the poll just came out for Marist, PBS, a very liberal poll generally, has Biden down, 51% disapprove, 43% approve. So now he has numbers very similar to President Trump's numbers. President Trump had a successful presidency despite being in the mid to low 40s in terms of his approval rating. Now Biden will see if he can similarly be an effective president. Now that he's getting, really rocked, the withdrawal leaving such a bad taste in people's minds, just watching it all. And, the worst thing of all, I spoke about it on Fox and Friends this morning. The worst thing was when the bodies came home for the dignified transfer, where the combat command hands them over to, the people in charge of the military cemeteries and so forth. It was a disaster for Joe Biden. If you saw, there was Joe, and I like him. I like him. He seems like a nice person. He seems like a patriot and all the rest of it. But he's looking at his watch the whole time during this the solemn, dignified transfer, the solemn ceremony. He's looking at his watch every time one of the GIs got taken off the one of the bodies was removed from the military transport, he'd look, it's almost like he was timing each incident. Like he had an appointment. He had some urgent place he had to be. And when you do that kind of stuff in front of Gold Star families that just lost their baby sons and daughters in this horrible explosion, you know, many of them, barely born when 9/11 happened in 2001, you know, 19-year-old, 18-year-olds, lots of 20-year-olds. It was just terrible. So he's been rocked by the chaotic withdrawal, by the death of the Marines and the Navy corpsman from Ohio and the staff sergeant from the Army, rounding out all three, giving credit to all our services, and we love them. And the one thing you can't do is not pay attention to them during that moment where it's barely a week since they've been informed that their beloved 20-year-old has perished. You can't be looking at your watch or even talking about your own son's cancer death when these people have such raw emotions where they, you know, coming to grips with life without their beloved child. That's anyway, Biden's at 43% now. And the jobs report that came out today kind of sucked also. We expected, three-quarters of a million jobs added. It was barely one-quarter of a million jobs added. So Biden's in for a rough patch right now, I fear. The one story I have not spoken about on television, it's funny, I don't think Fox likes doing stories about abortion. Abortion is so icky. You know, nobody wants to talk about it, whether you're for it or for the woman's right to choose or against abortion. For religious or ethical reasons, whatever. It is something that makes people deeply uncomfortable. So, of course, that's what I'm talking about. This law in Texas, and I believe that it will be soon replicated in Ohio because they've already tried the fetal heartbeat laws here in Ohio. I believe that half the states in the union, all the red states, will follow the lead of Texas and pass what is the nation's most restrictive anti-abortion law. It not only bans abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, it allows private citizens with no connection at all to the pregnant woman, it allows those private citizens to bring lawsuits against whoever helps that woman get an abortion, maybe even after the woman herself or her mom who drives her to the clinic or whatever it is, allows perfect strangers to sue, to bring a lawsuit against the woman getting the abortion or anyone who helps her, and they will be rewarded if they succeed, they prove their case, with $10,000, at least $10,000 a bounty. A bounty for suing women who get abortions. You know, I don't think you have to be like a raving liberal person to see what an infringement on that woman's constitutional rights, what an infringement that is. I mean, for a perfect stranger to be able to sue someone, maybe your daughter, your sister, because she got an abortion. What is it their business? You know, isn't it, what about privacy? What about a woman's, you know, right to control her own body? At least that, you know, under Roe v. Wade right now, I'm not going to talk about this much because it's early and it's distressing. But this is distressing because the Supreme Court, as currently constituted with the three members that were selected by Donald Trump, the conservative majority is at least 5-4, as it was in these Texas cases. By 5-4, they decided not to halt implementation of the new Texas law until they litigated it. That's what they usually do in these, you know, bombshell cases. They say, okay, maybe there's something there, but we're not going to allow the law to be implemented until the argument on constitutionality and so forth are made. So that's the prudent way to do it. You stop it. All right, we see Texas. You have this law. We're going to stop it until we litigate it. Now we're going to argue whether or not it's constitutional. What are the implications for Roe v. Wade with this new Texas law that bans abortion after 6 weeks. It's such a big change that usually the court would say, okay, we'll enjoin the law, we'll stop the law from being implemented until we decide whether or not the law is appropriate, whether or not the law can stand the test of constitutionality. But not in this case. In this case, the five conservative justices, including the three selected by Donald Trump, said, go ahead, Texas, you're on. So Texas right now, there's no abortions going on in Texas. So this is like the biggest day for the anti-abortion crowd ever, basically. Well, since Roe v. Wade, since 1973, it's a monumental thing that's happening here. It is monumental what's going on.
I got a question here. So I read about this law. There is no exception for rape or incest. So what Texas is saying, that a 15-year-old girl who gets, you know, bad things happen and she has to have a baby, she cannot get an abortion, but that same 15-year-old girl doesn't have to put on a mask because it's too evasive?
Yeah, it's...
It's
very, very inconsistent. And anyway, what business is it of yours, what this 15-year-old... It's between her and her family. It's not your business. I hate snitches. That's what this law is. It's a snitch law. If you want to snitch on someone getting an abortion and maybe you get $10,000 out of it, I mean, come on, folks. Is that where we want to go now? And see, I think Biden is in trouble. I think Biden, clearly the luster is off the gold here. President Biden is going to struggle now. I think all of his big legislation will be tied up now that he's a 43% approval president. I think that these are going to be rough times for Joe Biden, except that if something like this happens, Erica and I were in Washington, D.C. the day after Donald Trump was inaugurated. There were tens of thousands of women wearing pink hats. Remember those pink hats? I won't remind you what they were called. There were demonstrations in Washington, D.C. was huge, and in every major city in the country, and in many cities overseas, because the fear was that Donald Trump would become president. He would appoint conservative justices. Roe v. Wade, the seminal case that allowed a woman to have constitutionally the right to have her own body controlled, at least until the unborn child was viable, usually about 6 months. Five, 6 months, right? And that, now they're making it 6 weeks. I mean, it's nuts. It is nuts. And you're gonna see, it's going to add to the division in the country. It's going to motivate people who are not ordinarily activists to become activists. There's going to be a real divide between people. Listen, working at Fox News for 20 years now, it'll be 20 years in December that I've been at Fox, in November, I mean, 20 years I've been there. 20 years since 9/11. I have had an awakening in terms of my thinking. I've had, watching as many conservative speakers as I have, of all different stripes, all different ages, and watching them make their arguments for their point of view, which very often was different than my point of view, I've come to respect them. I really have come to hold them in high regard. For instance, I have no scorn for people that are anti-abortion. I understand the sincerity of people, many of them driven by their religion, to oppose abortion. Many people believe, like half the country, that life starts at conception. You know, I don't know about any of that, but I know that I respect people who are opposed to abortion. I respect people who are in favor of a woman's right to choose also. I think that each group has nuts, nut jobs, but each group is generally speaking made up of sincere people motivated by the best intentions. Some say that life is precious and you can't interfere with that process. Others say that baby is growing inside a woman who can decide for herself whether or not she wants to carry the child to term. But this law introduces a whole new nasty aspect. when you allow a perfect stranger to bring a lawsuit, and some of them, there'll be massive lawsuits. Some of them will be bankrolled by big groups that are opposed to abortion, and they'll find people to snitch out other people. It's going to be a mess. It's going to be a horrible, divisive mess. And the Supreme Court ultimately will have to adjudicate it whether they want to or not. And they're going to have to decide whether or not constitutionally that is appropriate to allow a stranger to sue a young woman trying to, you know, save her life as she sees it, even as she takes a life as the other side sees it. But I think that to allow snitches and strangers to get involved in that sacred process is disgusting. It really is so lowbrow. It is so offensive to me that I cannot believe as a lawyer that it will stand the test of constitutionality. I'm extremely distressed by it. And the court, I say to them, shame on you for abandoning your responsibility. However, if you're going to overthrow Roe v. Wade, then at least have the guts to do it straight up, not this sleazy, backhanded way. Kevin in Cleveland, something on abortion before we bring Eric in. What's in your mind, Kevin?
Yeah, I think you may be mistaken as far as the fine. The fine isn't the patient. The fine goes to the doctor, which is a lot.
You mean
different.
Who pays the fine?
Yeah, when they sue, they're actually ratting on the doctor, not the patient.
Oh, no, it's not just the doctor. It's anyone who aids or abets. In other words, the mom driving the girl to the abortion clinic, even if it's in a state where it's legal, going from Texas, they could bring the lawsuit in Texas. I think it's horrible. But I think, Kevin, I appreciate it. So what do you think?
I disrespect it, and I don't like it, and I'm fired up, and it's emotional for me. And, I mean, are we pretending that Texas or that abortion people who are pro-life actually care about the unborn? If they cared about the unborn, they would be trying to fix the foster care system in Texas. They would be trying to fix education. They would be talking about the life of the child once it's born. I mean, you're basically sending girls, young girls, to be married, girls who've been raped, girls who've had incest, girls who are forced to have babies, who can't afford babies. What are they supposed to do now? And it's about minorities. It's about people who cannot afford childcare, someone to babysit their children so that they can drive to New York to get an abortion. 1 in 3 women were having an abortion before Roe v. Wade, and 1 in 3 women are having abortions now, and they will even if you outlaw them. So you're basically sending women to their deaths, and it's what are we living in? This is The Handmaid's Tale. It's like we're living in Gilead, and it's outrageous that this is happening.
Generally speaking, I think that Joe Biden will do a good job, a suitable job in terms of opposing what's happening in Texas. But what do you think of the president's fading popularity? Now, just 43% of Americans approve of his presidency. He's got numbers very similar to Donald Trump's. Is the bloom off the Biden rose? I know you love the president. You want it to succeed, but it looks like he's fading.
I do love him, and I do think that he is a very empathetic person who has had a lot of tragedy in his own life. And I think it's unfortunate that he checked his watch. It's really terrible and disgraceful that if he did, I don't know if he did it 13 times or if that's like a Fox loop that's been made on. I don't know if that's for real, but...
You read it in the Washington Post. Fox.
I agree that in the Washington Post that he checked his watch 13 times. I read that he checked it once. I don't know if he checked it, but that's awful. But I don't know if it's true, but I haven't seen the video, but I'm going to.
I have, and it's true.
Benefit of the doubt. I don't know why he did that, but I don't know. But I think that getting out of war, he got us out of this war that Republicans and Democrats wanted him to get out of. and he is the president. He was not the military guy making the calls about who would stay at the airport that day. He didn't.
He made enough of the calls. He screwed up. He screwed up royally by evacuating the troops before he evacuated the civilians.
The general made the call. Whoever was there at
he's commander in chief. The buck stops there. That's what Harry Truman said, and it's true. So how about New York? And
are you happy though that we're done with Afghanistan?
I am, and I swore years ago. I swore in 2012 that I would never go back there, and I'm glad I did, and I'm glad I don't have to. Rain, New York, crazy.
Crazy, crazy. I've had a few of those basement apartments with small windows, and I just can't believe in that where so many people live, it's New Jersey is stacked with so many people living there, and it's crazy to think that so many people died.
61. There's a picture on the cover of the New York Times. So there's the basement apartment. You see the high windows. You look up at the street. Just imagine looking up at the streets. And we all had these apartments. That's why I'm keep bringing it up. Imagine a torrent of water pouring through, and there's no back door. There's no way out. It's just like in Katrina when they died in the attics because they were trapped in the attics and there was no way to get through the roof. So they drowned in their own attics.
This is extreme weather, and we need to believe in climate change and to believe in and to pass the infrastructure bill. I'm looking at you, Joan Manchin, and Kristen Sinema. We need this infrastructure bill and we need the money to build roads and
bridges.
That's
not an infrastructure bill.
Yes, it is.
That's another giveaway bill.
No, it's not. It's to build these bridges and roads and to
fix
the subways.
That's the first one. That's the 1 trillion.
Even the science.
That's the 1 trillion. The 3.5 trillion is for free college and so forth. I mean, good ideas, but can we afford them? So I'm glad to be home. I love you.
I'm so happy you're home. I love you too.
So Rosh Hashanah Monday and Labor Day. So is that can't happen very often that Rosh Hashanah and Labor Day are on the same day?
Yeah, it's super early this year.
Who's coming?
My mom and Jerry and my brother is coming in with his wife and 2 kids. His oldest is at college, so we'll get 2 of them. I'm so excited to be with everybody. Wonderful. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. We'll see you not on Monday. Rob, you're going to you'll have the reins.
Yes, sir.
So ride this steed appropriately.
I'll try not to crash it into the side of the road. We'll do what we can.
And we'll see you, everybody, on Tuesday. We'll see you Tuesday. Happy Labor Day. One last word of compassion for those who have suffered so grievously from these extraordinary weather events, particularly the one that's most personal to us is what happened in New York and the metropolitan area, 61 people dying from these extraordinary floods on Wednesday night into Thursday morning. They're in our thoughts and prayers. I know it's a cliche, but it's true in this case. And really, I don't know about climate change. I'm sure that somebody smarter than I will figure it out. But that was an awful lot of water, the most ever, 500 years. I'm Geraldo Rivera reporting Roadkill.
Roadkill with Geraldo Rivera.